Hello, this is Constance Smith. I am a, I would say, diehard listener. It's on my radio in my car, in my kitchen, and in my bathroom. And I am proud to be a member and just want you guys to keep us well informed, as you do.
Hi there, and thanks for listening today. I'm Rick Etchison with Randall White, taking just a minute now to explain why it's the perfect time to become a member of CAP Radio.
And I love what Constance had to say there, Rick, that she listens throughout the day, throughout her house, in her bathroom, and it's never been so easy to do just that. As a matter of fact, with a monthly donation of just $12, you can get this Bluetooth speaker with a suction cup that will just pop right on your shower wall. So you really can take CAP Radio everywhere with you and hear the amazing interviews like we just heard on Insight with Beth Ruyak and the mayor of Paradise. We've been following the Paradise story for you in collaboration with North State Public Radio and KQED. We have other collaborations with stations throughout the state. You've probably heard our California Dream series. Of course, ever since more than a year now, we've been following the Stephon Clark story, and we can only do these sorts of stories and news and music through your listener donations. If you haven't given, but you do listen and you enjoy this in-depth coverage, then don't wait any longer. The fund drive ends soon. This is the last full day. So contribute now by calling 1-800-800-5867. That's 1-800-800-5867. Or head online at capradio.org.
That's terrific. I love the diehard listener and the mayor of Paradise. One of the most amazing things that's happened in my broadcast career happened during the campfire last year. In November, the fire was still raging. We got a call from one of our members in Paradise. She was in the post office in Chico. She'd just gotten her new credit card, and she wanted us to have her new credit card number because she had lost her old one along with everything else she owned in that fire. That is a diehard listener and fan. And that's how much public radio means to a lot of people.
You get a call like that and you just assume and expect that they might be calling and say, hey, I need to pause my donations for a little bit. But instead it was, hey, I need to update my numbers.
Right.
Incredible, Rick.
And it was absolutely amazing.
And those are the type of listeners like you that we want to thank right now, because we are coming near the end of our fund drive here. Today is the last full day. And we're getting close to our goal, and it's because of you. So we need to thank you. And if you've been putting it off, you're one of those that sort of waits till the end of the drive, which, hey, that's me. I got to be honest. I think I got into this business because I need a deadline to get things done. Well, your deadline is now, 1-800-800-5867, or you can do it online at capradio.org, and a big thank you.
You're listening to Insight Live on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Hundreds of bills are in motion right now at the Capitol in Sacramento. We're going to highlight a few that have been moving with less attention, shall we say, than the police use of force bills. CAP Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler is joining me for this week's Capitol Chat. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
And hundreds of bills is completely accurate. In fact, maybe even 1,000 at this point.
Of overall bills active, well over 1,000 when you combine Senate bills and Assembly bills. It's insane. And some committee hearings this week have been starting at like 8 or 9 in the morning and going until 8 or 9 at night. Mm. It has not been a week for brevity at the state capitol. Let's put it that way.
Well, today we have this one-day teacher strike happening in the Sacramento Unified School District. So let's start on the subject of education. There is a conflict right now between the California Teachers Association and charter schools. So what's being considered in that realm of legislation, and who's on what side?
There has long been this tension, and generally a status quo has prevailed, where you have teachers' unions against charters about the growth of charter schools and whether they are regulated the way public, or rather whether traditional public schools are, because in California all charters are public, and whether they're growing too quickly, whether they are siphoning money off from traditional public schools. And of course, many, not all, but many charter schools are not union schools. And so those are some of the tensions that are involved in this debate. Now, I think generally over the last several years, neither side has had enough votes to push through some changes to the status quo that they've wanted. Mm. They've certainly tried to make changes at the ballot box. I think most noteworthy, last year in the governor's race, the Charters invested well over $20 million in support of former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, who was running against current Governor Gavin Newsom. And now we already have a bill that passed earlier this year involving charters and transparency and subjecting them to the same transparency and open records laws that school districts and school boards are. So now we have another set of bills moving forward that have a lot of momentum because Democrats have more control of the legislature than before, three-quarters majorities.
Right.
That makes it easier to get to a simple majority in the Senate and Assembly. And Gavin Newsom is perhaps seen as, you know, as being open to some of these bills. So that's those are the dynamics at play here.
So the group that we're focused on are Assembly Bills AB 1505, 06, 07, and 08. Are these all different authors? Are they working together? Are they organized in this group of four bills? What's going on behind the scenes?
And as usual, there's always extra bills that may not, you know, always get pulled in there. But I think there's, you know, Senate bills that are getting in there, too. And at heart, you know, look, backers would love to have a slate of bills. Sometimes, as we'll see in our next topic, one or two bills can fall off a slate and help enable other bills in that slate to move forward. But basically what we're talking about here are allowing school districts to have more control over charter school authorizations, letting them consider facilities and fiscal and academic impacts on the district. There's a cap being proposed on the growth of charter schools and the question of whether charters could operate inside, or rather outside of the district that authorizes it. So those are some of the reforms, some of the changes. I don't like using the word reforms in any context because that can, you know, sometimes has a connotation of a consensus that a reform or a change is needed. Clearly, there's no consensus on this matter. And so the bills passed the Assembly Education Committee yesterday, and they will continue to move forward. They have several more committee and floor votes before they reach the governor's desk.
In the scope of students going to school in California, about 10% are enrolled in charter schools. But that's a big jump up. The numbers I'm seeing are that we are getting close to 650,000 students enrolled in charter schools. And the number could be even higher than that, because I think that's data from a few years ago. So if you have bills at the Capitol, you're going to get a lot of families, you're going to get a lot of teachers and the students. And I think that's what happened this week.
There were lots of voices on both sides, and our new state government reporter, Scott Rodd, was down there yesterday. He sent us a couple of short clips of tape that we're going to hear right now. And first, let's hear from Margaret Fortune, who runs a Sacramento-based charter school network. She was previously on the board of former SAC Mayor Kevin Johnson's charters, St. Hope, St. Hope Public Schools. And she has been active in charter circles, worked on a task force in the Schwarzenegger administration. And she is arguing that legislation would limit school choice, especially for students of low socioeconomic status.
Part of what the charter school law is intended to do is to give these kids another option within the public school system to have a high quality and rigorous education.
So it sounds like the activists are going to be careful about any of these bills going forward, and yet there is going to be lobbying. I think we're going to hear next from an Oakland assemblyman who is co-authoring one of the bills.
Democrat Rob Bonta, who's arguing that charter school laws have not been revised since they were introduced more than 25 years ago.
It's highly doubtful that when that bill was passed in 1992 that they got it exactly right.
This is a big question that probably isn't easy to answer in a simple way, but why have charter schools become such a lightning rod in public education? And I would guess it has to do with what I mentioned just a moment ago, the increasing numbers, for one thing.
Numbers, money, whether teachers at charter schools are unionized, those are many of the reasons that come into play, and just politics. Charters like to think of themselves as coming in and challenging a failing education system that they have, that they are able to break through some of the bureaucratic hurdles that can slow things down, try new things, experiment. a traditional public school say, look, when you do that, you take away money, and because you take away students who move into charters, then the money for each student that the state provides goes into the charters. That leaves less money in for traditional public schools, creates additional challenges for them. California as a whole is down near the bottom of the 50 states in per pupil funding. And that is even after a booming economy for several years and an ever-growing budget and a new school funding formula championed by Jerry Brown that seeks to direct more money to low-income students and foster youth students and English language learning students. So this is just one of those battles that has gone on for years, and it will continue to go on. And sometimes it'll swing a little toward the unions, and sometimes it'll swing a little toward the charters, and maybe then there's an election and things swing back a little bit. But I think what's key at this moment is generally, as I mentioned earlier, the status quo has held for a period of time. And this could be a moment where the status quo swings. And if it does swing, it is going to swing away from the charters and towards the goals of the teachers' unions.
You are listening to Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. We have been talking about charter school legislation. Again, it's AB 1505, 06, 07, 08, and a number of others. Let's change gears to another issue that involves legislation that's really easy to call the big gulp legislation.
Yeah.
It does have to do with soda discussion and the style of sodas, which are the big gulp, the real big cups. But anyway, catch us up on what's happening with the soda tax and then the size of the containers.
So there are three different, and probably more, we talk about slates of bills. Here's another case. But three bills of note involving this sodas at the state capitol. And one is a statewide tax on sodas. Another is warning labels, health warning labels on sodas. And a third
sugary
is
drinks.
Sugary drinks, yes. And a third is a ban on the big gulp size sodas, as in the sodas larger than 16 ounces, I believe. So obviously opposition to those bills. But it seemed, interestingly, if you stop and think about it, the biggest opposition from the soda industry, the restaurant industry, not necessarily to the tax, not necessarily to the warning labels. Apparently, the biggest opposition was to the big gulp bill.
Banning that size of drink.
Yeah. So apparently, I mean, I'm sure they aren't huge fans of taxes on their products, but apparently they're more okay with that than they are with banning the sale of big gulps. So I think that's interesting.
So business stepped in and was able to limit some of the efforts of this legislation.
Well, the author of the big gulp bill has decided to make it a 2-year bill, which basically means shelving it for this year. It's the first year of a legislative session, trying again next year, hoping to make it easier for the other two bills to move forward. Not that those bills are going to be seen as sure things. The tax, for example, would take a 2-thirds vote. And the warning label bill has failed many previous years. But you could say, and I'm glad you didn't use the pun in the script that I floated to your producer yesterday, but you could say that business has taken a big gulp out of the anti-soda agenda.
Wow.
I know. Thank you for leaving that for me. and by being able to push this particular measure off to the side.
Is it important? It seems important to note that we're calling it maybe the soda tax, but it also applies to drinks that are just sugary, which could be a sports drink. It could be an iced tea that's sugary,
yeah,
or even an energy drink of some sort.
And I should know this, but I haven't covered this closely. I wonder if Diet Coke, for example, would be subject to this tax. I'm sure many people listening now know, are saying, Ben, you should know that, but sugary drinks, how technical is the definition? And will this change as it moves through the legislative process? Because these things often do.
All right. That's a to be continued.
Yes. I'm going to add one last thing, which is recall for listeners that last year there was a very ugly fight at the state capitol involving the soda industry and a prospective ballot measure on that ended up qualifying for last November's ballot that would have raised the threshold to increase local tax measures like Measure U here in Sacramento from a majority to 2-thirds. And a lot of local officials, including Mayor Steinberg, a lot of state officials, were very scared that voters might approve this measure because voters might say, hey, we think that a tax should take 2-thirds. It is a lot harder to reach a 2-thirds voter margin to raise taxes. And so in a deal struck at the state capitol, that really infuriated some Democrats, but they voted for it anyway because they felt they needed to. They agreed to pass a law banning new soda tax increases at the local level. So get rid of this patchwork, grandfathering in existing ones like the one that the city of Richmond passed recently. Grandfathering those in, but banning all new ones. And so lawmakers at the time said, we're not going to forget what the soda industry did. And clearly they did not forget, and they are moving forward with these bills this year. And we'll see if the move by the soda industry last year ends up backfiring this year.
Again, you are listening to Ben Adler. He is Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief. At the end of every week, we have this segment called Capital Chat and review some of what's happened. So I do think I want to close the loop on our discussion this week about the hearing Tuesday on the Weber bill, AB 392, one of two police use of force bills. So let's talk about how that hearing ended and what the next step is.
So originally, I think we all expected the bill to be passed by the committee and sent onto the floor of the assembly for a full floor vote. Turns out it was passed by the committee, which I don't think was a surprise, and instead sent to the assembly rules committee. And you could, you know, there's legislative speak where a normal word that you and I use for something else like parking, that gets used in a different context. So essentially, this use of force bill has been parked in the assembly rules committee. And it's going to hang out there while additional amendments are taken that give the bill a better shot of passing the full assembly floor, because there were multiple lawmakers at Tuesday's hearing, Democratic lawmakers, who said, we believe there needs to be a change, but we think what is proposed in this bill goes too far, and we want to see there be some sort of middle ground worked out. And so I heard two, and someone else heard a third lawmaker. So I think there were three of the six Democrats on the committee said, I'm voting for it today to keep the discussion going, but I want to see some changes. And that's, by the way, I should say, that's very typical for bills of high and low profiles to get votes in an opening committee from a lawmaker who says, I'm going to vote to move it along, but I'm not prepared to vote for it on the floor yet.
But how was it for the bill's author, Dr. Shirley Weber, that the bill didn't go to the assembly floor, that it is hanging out in rules right now?
I asked her office and I haven't heard back, which is odd because they're usually pretty communicative. My understanding is this was a change during the hearing, a decision made during the hearing. And you know, I'll get a little bit into, sorry, I'm apologizing in advance, a little bit weedy here. Law enforcement groups believe that there's a cost associated with this bill because new training would be necessary. And because of that cost, they believe the bill should be moved into the Appropriations Committee. That is often a place where a bill can get a cost analysis and sometimes be delayed further. That is not going to happen, my reporting suggests. Neither the chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee, Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, or Speaker Rendon intend to do that. But it seems like this is a case of trying to maybe give law enforcement something by saying it's not going to appropriations, but we're going to move it over to rules. The other thing that I've heard is that, well, if it were on the floor, everyone would be asking, is it coming up for a vote today? Is it coming up for a vote today? And you'd have to keep passing each day on that bill. This way, you don't have to, because the fact is the bill's not ready for a full floor vote. If it went to the floor right now, the indications are it would not pass in its current form, and it would need to be amended on the floor anyway. So now there, you know, it's, you know, the argument I hear is it's essentially, you know, some people are saying, well, does this mean the speaker's going to sidetrack the bill the way he did with single payer? My read on that is absolutely not. Two different issues, two different bills, and the use of force bill will move when it's ready to move.
Was that discussion of appropriations a strategy discussion, or was that a real question about this bill?
Depends on who you ask. So yes,
okay.
You know, if in fact there would be more training required, yeah. I mean, there is a fiscal component to the bill. There is that other bill in the Senate that would go to a fiscal committee because it absolutely would require new training, lots of money for new statewide best practices and for law enforcement agencies, state and local, to change their policies to adhere to these best practices. But we don't even know if that bill is going to get through its first Senate committee. The chairwoman of that committee, Nancy Skinner, a senator from Oakland, has been seen as potentially willing to kill that bill to focus the discussion on 392.
All right. That other bill is SB 230. You will hear more coverage about that. Continuing.
We'll test you on it later. So
later
write these
in the
down
month.
Right after you write down the Fund Drive phone number.
The hearing Tuesday was very emotional. I'm going to refer people to your coverage of the hearing earlier in the week, which is at capradio.org. That was a very thorough Capitol chat, and I think there are so many bills we could spend that amount of time on, so let's continue to do what we can over the next couple weeks.
And thanks to our listeners who make it all possible.
Thank you, Ben. That is Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, and I want to add a P.S. to this. Next Tuesday, in terms of local government, Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg is going to join me in the studio, and we'll talk about a number of city issues. We're interested in what your questions might be for the mayor, so we're going to open up the Insight Hotline. It is a phone number, 916-234-3279. That's 916-234-3279. You can find that number on our website. Call in, leave your question. It might get used on the air next week when I talk to the mayor on Tuesday. This is Insight on Cap Radio.